The first of my suggestions is that, if at all possible, we should observe the Parinirvana day throughout the day. Make it a whole day celebration. We should read the Mahaparinibbana Sutta and chant the Vajrasattva mantra. The first, that is to say, the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, as I've mentioned earlier on, is part of the Pali Canon. It's the 16th sutta of the Digha Nikaya. And it gives, the Mahaparinibbana Sutta gives, an account of the last few months of the Buddha's life. And especially, it gives an account of the last day, or rather, the last night of the Buddha's earthly existence. The Mahaparinibbana Sutta is a composite work. It's been put together. It consists of quite a number of different episodes and teachings, some of them not very closely related to the main theme, in some cases even apparently not related at all. Two-thirds of the material found in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta is also found in various other places in the Pali Canon. Only one-third is not so found. Only one-third is unique, so to speak, to the Mahaparinibbana Sutta itself. Perhaps it's not necessary in the course of our celebration of Parinirvana Day to read through the whole of the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. We can perhaps make a selection and read only those parts, only those sections which have a direct bearing on the Parinirvana itself or on the events leading up to the Parinirvana itself. The Mahaparinibbana Sutta on that day could, of course, be read aloud in the shrine room. Perhaps people could take it in turns to read. Perhaps order members could take it in turns to read. And of course, one must remember to read slowly, by which I don't mean very, very slowly, I mean don't rush it, and mindfully, paying attention to what one is reading and to the meaning of what one is reading, and also loudly and clearly and distinctly, so that everybody can hear you. And please do check your pronunciation of Pali proper names, etc., beforehand, because so that you don't stumble over them in the course of your reading, which is very upsetting for the people, you know, listening. And then, the chanting of the Vajrasattva mantra. This could be done at intervals throughout the day, as well as part of the evening sevenfold puja. But some of you may be wondering, why the Vajrasattva mantra? Why the 100-syllabled mantra? Why not the mantra of Tara, or Manjushri, or Vajrapani, or Padmasambhava? Why the Vajrasattva mantra? Well, the answer is quite simple. Vajrasattva is connected with death. With death. And I remember how I first discovered this fact that Vajrasattva was connected with death. This takes me back quite a few years. I was then living in Kalimpong, and I went up to Gangtok, the capital of the tiny state of Sikkim, to see Jamyang Khyentse Rinpoche, who was then living in Gangtok. And he, as most of you I think know, was one of my Tibetan teachers. I must have made the journey, must have made that trip up into Gangtok to see him, either in 58 or 59. But I remember he was staying at the palace temple, the Palace Lakhang, on the outskirts of Gangtok. So I was ushered into a sort of antechamber, and I was asked just to wait because he was occupied for the time being. I had to wait, I think, about half an hour. And at the end of that period, I was ushered into his presence, and he received me, as he always did, in a very kindly and fatherly sort of way. And on this occasion, with apologies for having kept me waiting. And he added, by way of explanation, that he had been performing the Vajrasattva Puja and recitation of the Vajrasattva Mantra on behalf of a Lama friend of his who had just died. So in this way I came to understand, he added a few more words of explanation, I came to understand that Vajrasattva was connected with death. And a few years later, I had quite a strange experience in this connection. I had this experience in the winter of 1966 to 67. I was back in Kalimpong. I'd spent 2 years in the West, 2 years at the Hampstead Buddhist Vihara. And of course I decided that I was going to leave India, I was going to come back to England and settle there. So I was in India, I was in Kalimpong on a farewell visit. And I was staying at the Vihara, at my own Vihara, the Triyana Bhavatana Vihara. So what happened was this. I woke up in the middle of the night. And I really did wake up. It wasn't a dream, it wasn't even a vision. I woke up in the middle of the night. After the experience, I looked at my watch and I saw that it was 2 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, I woke up in the middle of the night. I was wide awake. And yes, as I afterwards learned, it all happened at about 2 o'clock. And it was bright like daylight. Bright like daylight. So I sat up on my bed and I looked around and I looked down the side of my bed. There was a great pit in the floor. That certainly hadn't been there the previous evening. A pit. A deep pit. So I looked down into this pit. And there was an old friend of mine standing there. And he'd been dead several years by then. He was standing there in that pit. And I remember very clearly, I can see in my mind's eye now, the pit must have been just over 6 feet deep, because he was just about 6 feet tall and he was completely contained in the pit. It was just the top of his head came just within 2 or 3 inches of the edge of the pit. He was standing in the pit. He was standing like this. So I just looked and I saw this sight for several minutes. And of course I knew that he was dead and I knew that something was wrong. And I knew that something had to be done. But what was to be done? Then I bethought me of Jamyang Khyentse Rinpoche and the Vajrasattva Mantra. And what he told me about the Vajrasattva Mantra, that he'd recited the Vajrasattva Mantra as well as doing the Vajrasattva Puja for his deceased Lama friend. So I thought, I should do this. So I started repeating the Vajrasattva Mantra, sitting up on my bed. And as I repeated it, the words of the mantra, in Tibetan characters, came out of my mouth. I saw them quite distinctly. So big. As I repeated the 100 syllables, they came out of my mouth. And they formed a sort of chain, a sort of garland. And went down into the pit, right down, and then up again. So as I was reciting the mantra, the letters of the mantra were going round and round in a sort of, well, garland. And within reach of this person in the pit. So this person in the pit caught hold of the garland of letters of the mantra and he pulled himself up and out of the pit and apparently disappeared. At that moment, I heard horns blowing just outside. Horns blowing. I think ram's horns. And I then remembered. It was the night of the new moon, and the yogis were abroad. The yogis being a particular caste or sect of Nepalese. Very strange people. I've met several of them. The yogis have a hereditary duty imposed upon them. Apparently, this is what I learned in the course of my stay in Kalimpong. I never checked it from any book. A duty of going around at certain times of the year, on the night of the new moon, and collecting the souls of the dead. So they go around. They operate at night. You hear them blowing their horns and calling the souls of the dead. And you keep away from them. At least Nepalese people keep away from them. Dogs keep away from them. Dogs are very afraid of them. Even the fiercest dog won't touch them. Will try to get away from them. And in the morning, they come around to the houses, you know, that they've been, you know, clearing of spirits, souls of the dead. And you're supposed to give them a little rice, you know, raw rice, and a little money. Just a few coins. It's only a token thing. And then they go away. Most Nepalese people are so afraid, they just throw the money and the rice from a distance, and they get away as quickly as they can. These yogis are very strange people. They belong, as I said, to this particular caste or sect. And the members of this caste or sect, they do a sort of turn of duty. It comes round every few years. And they put on their yogi outfit and they take their ram's horn and they go off with their little basket, I think it is, collecting the souls of the dead. But I several times when they came to the Vihara, the morning after doing their duty, I used to engage them in conversation. My Nepalese students and disciples used to say, no, you mustn't talk to the yogis, you mustn't go anywhere near, they're very, very dangerous people, you know. But I didn't, take any notice of them. I used to come and talk to the yogis, and I think some quite interesting conversation, because I knew well enough Nepalese to be able to talk to them. But anyway, that is by the by. But as this person, this old friend of mine, climbed up the letters of the mantra out of the pit and disappeared, at that moment I heard the horns blowing, and the light, as it were, went out. It was black, dark. And I groped for my watch or clock, or whatever I had in those days, and it was 2 o'clock. So, since that experience, I've had a certain amount of faith, one might say, in the Vajrasattva mantra, in this connection, in Vajrasattva. Vajrasattva is associated not only with death, he's associated with hell, inverted commas. Not hell in the Christian sense, of course. Hell in the sense of lower states of temporary suffering. And Vajrasattva is perhaps associated with hell because he's associated with death. At least so far as ordinary people are concerned. That is to say, people who have not attained to stream entry.